David Linden is a Johns Hopkins neuroscientist and the New York Times bestselling author of The Compass of Pleasure. His new book is Touch, The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind, a book examining the sensation of touch from its biology to its vital role in every aspect of the human experience. It's a great pleasure to welcome David Linden to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to this subject matter?
Well, what brought me to it was twofold. On the one hand, I realized that touch was such an important aspect in my own personal life that I felt compelled to write about it. It's what I was thinking about a lot of the time. It turns out that my institution, Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, is a world center of touch research, and I would eat lunch with my colleagues, and I would hear the wonderful stories about the new work coming out of their laboratories, and so I became a fanboy of touch research. So those two things together compelled me to write.
So let us begin with a baseline definition, if you will, of our sense of touch, of what that is. What makes it so different from our other senses?
Well, what makes it different from our other senses is severalfold. Perhaps the most important thing is that touch is always on, right? You can close your eyes and you don't see, and you can plug your ears and you don't hear, and you can pinch your nose and you don't smell, but you can't ever turn off your touch sense and your skin. And as a consequence, we tend to discount it because we can't imagine losing it. It's so ever-present. The key thing, I think, about touch is that it is actually many different senses all in parallel. So in the nerve endings in our skin, we have sensors for texture and pressure and slip and vibration and hot and cold and pain and sexual sensation, and all of these combine together to produce the unified effect that we feel in our brain, which is touch.
And you talk about in the book of everything from our skin to our nerves to our brain, that these are our circuits that are interconnected and so deeply, as you just mentioned, influence our lives. So with that said, why do you think it's often overlooked?
I think it's overlooked because we can't imagine not having it, is really the case. It is there in the background all the time. We never shut it off, and so we can't imagine it being gone. The thing, though, is that if you look at our language, you can see that touch is intrinsically emotional. When we talk about our tender emotions, we talk about our feelings, not our sightings or our smellings. And this might seem like I picked up on some quirk of English, but it's not just recent English, and it's not just English. This is what you find in many languages all over the world, and in English dating back to the 12th century. So when we say, I was emotionally affected, we say, I'm touched. If we say, someone is socially clumsy, we will call them tactless. Literally, they lacked touch.
Mm.
Touch is intrinsically emotional.
We use terms like, you hurt my feelings.
Well, right, and that's really, really interesting, because when you look in the brain at pain signaling, what we find is that there's two different systems. One we call the discriminative aspect of pain. This is all the facts. Oh, I've got a pain in my leg. It's right in my upper thigh. It's a stabbing pain, and it's pretty strong. Those are all the factual aspects. And then there is the emotional aspect of pain, which is deeply intrinsically negative. And these are processed, these different aspects of pain are processed in totally different brain regions. If you put someone in a brain scanner and you have them read a breakup letter from their sweetheart, or you have them excluded socially in some interaction, what you find is that the part of the brain that's active is the same emotional pain circuit that was involved in the emotional aspect of physical pain. So when someone says, you hurt my feelings, that's not just a metaphor. It's actually literally true.
And we often will, in our metaphors, use words that deal with touch, right? And are they often as accurate as that one?
Well, I'll give you an example of one that is. If you go around the world and you ask people what the sensation of chili peppers is, they'll tell you, oh, chili peppers are hot. And what's the sensation of mint? Oh, the sensation of mint is cold. And you might say, well, okay, these things are culturally constructive, because we might say, you know, the Tesla Roadster is cool, or the actress Rachel Weisz is hot, you know, to mean sexually attractive. And so maybe hot and cool for mint are similarly culturally constructive, but they're not. They're the same in every human. And so, well, why is that? Well, you could say, maybe there are hot sensors and there are chili pepper chemical sensors, and they converge in the same region of the brain so that they feel the same. And that's a perfectly good explanation that a lot of people had for a long time and turns out to be absolutely wrong. It turns out that the metaphor is in the molecule. The protein that senses heat is the very same protein that senses capsaicin, the chemical in chili peppers that gives them the hot sensation. And the sensor that senses cold is the very same one that senses menthol, which is the active chemical in mint.
That's fascinating. You write in the book a lot about sexual touch. Is it because it's such a large part of the research, or it's because it's something that that so many of us can identify to?
Well, in truth, it's a grossly under-researched area. So it's astonishing how little we know about sexual touch. So, you know, here's an example of just how ignorant we are, right? You can have sexual feelings from being touched a lot of different places on the body, but for pretty much every man, the head of the penis is particularly intense, and the external clitoris for women is particularly intense in producing sexual sensation. So you might say, oh, well, all right, what happens if you look at the structure of the nerve endings in the skin there? Is there anything special about it? And the answer is, well, mostly not, but there's one particular little curled ending called the mucocutaneous end organ that is found there and also in some other places. And so we think maybe this is what gives rise to this very special sexual sensation. But actually, we don't even know, because there aren't experiments to address it, because sexual function is a grossly underfunded and under-researched area. Sexual sensation in the genitals is what drives so much of human behavior, and yet we don't understand the basic idea of what kind of nerve ending is it that produces it.
So what do we know about an orgasm, other than it feels good?
Yeah, well, you know, orgasm is a great example of a way in which our brain sort of cooks up something for us to experience, right? We think of orgasms as being intrinsically emotionally positive, and we also think of them as being involved in certain sort of discriminative factual sensations about touch, say, particularly in the genital area. Well, it turns out, though, that these things are dissociable. Certain people have orgasms from seizures, or that are not pleasurable at all, because they activate the part of the brain that's involved in the facts of touch, but don't activate the brain's pleasure circuitry, which is normally activated during orgasm and is what gives it its positive emotional tone otherwise. When you're having an orgasm, you don't have to think about, oh, well, there's this much sensation and there's this much emotional tone and these emotional components. You experience it as a gestalt, as a unified perception. And that is the magic of what the brain cooks up for you.
You mentioned about being in the lunchroom and talking to your colleagues and being a fanboy. I'm curious of how this came up, but you talk about this in the book, that one of your colleagues, I guess it was actually a non-scientist friend, said, and it was about Braille, of if you were to lose your fingers, would another sensitive part of the body, like the genitals, would you be able to read Braille? And you say no.
Yeah, the answer is no. And you know, you can go to your local ATM and try this out if nobody's around. If you don't believe.
No, you can't.
You shouldn't be doing that, David. Well, so it turns out that it's all in the details, that the word sensitive doesn't capture enough of the variation. So places like your genitals or the cornea of your eye are sensitive in the sense that they can detect very small indentations of the skin. But they are not discriminative in the sense that they can detect fine form like the raised Braille dots. So places like your lips and your fingertips have many of the specialized endings called Merkel endings that we need to distinguish fine form and texture. Your cornea and your genitals don't have Merkel endings, and that's why you can't read Braille with them.
When it comes to the idea of, and I guess we talked about this earlier, of why this is so often unreported and so little research is often done on touch when compared to the other senses. But we know, speaking of Braille, we know from personal stories of people who are blind or personal stories of people who are unable to hear. But what about touch? What is life like for those who cannot feel and touch and can't even experience pain?
Well, right. There are very few people. It's extraordinarily rare to lose all touch sensation entirely. There are people who have something called congenital total insensitivity to pain. They can feel pressure. They can feel temperature and fine touch, but they can't feel pain. And you might think, oh, what a blissful way to live without pain. But it turns out to actually be disastrous because you need pain to keep your body from being damaged. So the example that is talked about in the medical literature, there was a boy in Pakistan who had no ability to feel pain, and in order to impress his friends, he jumped off a high roof and landed in the street. He got up, he said, "I'm fine," and he went home and promptly died. He didn't know he was injured because he couldn't feel any pain from his broken bones or damaged internal organs. People who can't feel any pain eat hot food and scald their esophagus. They wear their clothes too tight, and they develop lesions and infections. It's very hard to live past the age of 30 if you can't feel any pain at all. It sounds like it would be great, but it turns out to be a massive problem.
In the natural human degradation of aging, our eyesight can get poorer as we get older. Our hearing can get poorer as we get older. How is our touch affected by our aging?
Well, unfortunately, our touch gets poorer as well as we age. And interestingly, it happens very, very slowly. And it happens even starting at about age 20. From age 20 onward, every year, you lose about 1% of the touch receptors in your skin. If you went to count the nerve endings that convey different kinds of touch information, from pain to hot and cold and fine touch and sexual sensation, they would all be reduced by about 1% a year over your total lifespan. Generally, you don't tend to notice this until, you know, middle age or later when enough of this loss has accumulated. But it's very important. In some ways, it underlies, for example, the difficulty that the elderly have in achieving orgasm because there are fewer receptors for sexual sensation. More importantly, when you have fewer touch sensors, it's harder to interact with the world. When you're driving, you can't feel the subtle sensations through your steering wheel that indicate that the road is slippery, for example, and reduce your speed accordingly. You can't feel the way that the ground impacts the bottom of your feet as well, and as a consequence, you lose that information, and that's one of many reasons why elderly people are more subject to devastating falls. Interestingly, in this last case, one good way to ameliorate that is just to go without shoes. No, it's true. It turns out that old folks who go without shoes or who wear thin socks have many fewer falls than people who wear shoes all the time.
And as far as touch, the impact, that without that layer, if you will, of the shoe, it's more immediate.
Exactly. In other words, the shoe insulates. You don't feel the ground as well when you're wearing a shoe as you do when you're barefoot or have just a thin sock. So when you can feel it better, then you get more information through your feet, and you're better able to adjust your stance and less likely to fall. Now, there are other reasons in addition to that why the elderly are more subject to falls, having to do with balance and muscle strength and the speed of the conduction of nervous impulses. These things also contribute. But touch sense on the sole of the foot is part of it.
So as we wrap up our conversation, I'm interested in, you've obviously, there's a lot of work being done on this, but you have certainly said that there's much more work to be done. Are you optimistic that we will get there, that we will start to understand touch more in the future?
Well, I'm optimistic in terms of the sense that science is making enormous strides and we have new technologies. And there are wonderful things coming. There will be whole new classes of pain-killing drug, local anesthetic. There'll be effective anti-itch medicines that come from our insights about touch. What I'm not optimistic about is our federal government funding biomedical research generally, which includes touch research, because the funding in constant dollars for the NIH has been in decline for a number of years, and right now the funding rate is getting lower and lower, and we are slipping behind other countries in our contributions to biomedical research. So on the one hand, I'm very excited about what's coming up. On the other hand, I'm scared that there won't be the money to exploit this in the ways that will benefit humanity to the greatest degree.
The name of the book is Touch, The Science of Hand, Heart, and Mind. David Winden is the author of the book, The Compass of Pleasure. He's also a professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program, David. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Again, David Winden is the author of Touch. The book is published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.